Good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us here at Sun Sounds for the Tuesday, July 14th edition of the East Valley News. I'm J.W. Nicholas, your reader for the next half hour, and we'll be looking at some news from the past week in Chandler, Gilbert, and Sun Lakes. And we'll begin this afternoon at the Chandler Arizonan with an article by Paul Mariniak, Arizonan Executive Editor. Shuttered Tempe School becomes Kyrene Lifeline. The final bell at Kyrene de las Manitas in Tempe wasn't supposed to be temporary. After closing last month as part of Kyrene's school consolidation plan, the campus was expected to sit empty this fall. Instead, it will reopen July 22nd to house hundreds of former Manitas students and their counterparts from neighboring Kyrene de la Mirada in Chandler after a hidden water pipe flooded much of the latter's building. It is the second major emergency relocation in less than a year for the district. Last August, it was forced to temporarily split its pre-K through 5th students at Sierra Elementary in Ahwatukee across three different schools because of strong odors from a roof replacement project. Such are the problems that can crop up for a district with buildings that are roughly three decades old. This time, the relocation of the Mirada School community is necessary so crews can repair water damage that stretched from Mirada's front office through Classroom Pod A and several major corridors. District officials say students and staff should prepare to remain at Manitas through winter break, although they could return sooner if repairs are completed and the campus is deemed safe for occupancy. The flood was discovered around 7:30 a.m. June 15th, after a domestic water line concealed inside a wall broke, sending water throughout portions of the campus before the damage was discovered. Facilities personnel were notified at approximately 7:30 a.m., and within 30 minutes, the district's emergency management team had convened to assess the damage and begin planning its response. Restoration contractors were on site within an hour, beginning emergency water extraction and drying operations. District administrators quickly realized the damage extended well beyond wet carpet. It was quickly determined that repairs were not going to be completed by the first day of school, Assistant Superintendent CFO Chris Herman told the governing board last week. Officials considered three possible responses: repairing the school while students remained on campus, installing portable classrooms, or temporarily relocating the entire school. Because of the extensive remediation required and the lack of portable classrooms, administrators concluded moving the entire campus was the only practical option. A second life. The relocation carries an irony not lost on district officials. Manitas had only recently completed its final school year after the governing board voted last December to close the campus as part of a district-wide consolidation plan driven largely by declining enrollment that shuttered two other elementary schools last month. Two middle schools and the Kyrene Traditional Academy are slated to close next May. Now, Manitas is becoming a lifeline for the very school its students were supposed to start attending next month. Once Mirada is fixed, it will be the new home for Manitas students. Instead of scattering Mirada students among several schools, the district has access to a fully equipped elementary school capable of accommodating an entire student body while repairs continue. Although Manitas officially closed at the end of the school year, district staff are now preparing classrooms, reconnecting technology, relocating furniture and instructional materials, and readying the campus for students once again. "It's been really exceptional," said Kelly Bruner, Executive Director of School Effectiveness, of the collaboration amongst district departments preparing the campus. She said classroom assignments have already been finalized while facilities, technology, curriculum, and academic staff are coordinating the movement of everything needed to recreate Mirada's learning environment. Teachers will receive access to their new classroom before school begins so they can prepare for the year, and the district plans to hold its traditional Meet the Teacher event at the Manitas campus. Extensive repairs ahead. The presentation to board members illustrated just how extensive the damage has become. Water inundated Mirada's front office, hallways connecting the administrative offices to classrooms, and Pod A. Photographs depicted standing water throughout the corridors, flooded office areas, and extensive damage requiring demolition. Facilities Director Mason Mead said the district immediately notified its insurance provider, known as the Trust, which now oversees major restoration decisions. Environmental testing found no asbestos-containing materials, allowing restoration contractors to begin removing cabinetry, baseboards, and sections of drywall to accelerate drying. Containment barriers have been erected throughout affected portions of the building, while industrial air movers and dehumidifiers continue removing moisture. Approximately 90% of classrooms and office contents already have been inventoried and relocated. The next phase includes electrical inspections, environmental clearance testing, evaluation of flooring replacement options, and development of a detailed restoration schedule before rebuilding can begin. More than moving desks. Relocating an entire elementary school involves far more than transporting furniture. District officials are coordinating transportation routes, redesigning pickup and drop-off procedures, reconnecting classroom technology, relocating curriculum materials, and ensuring teachers have everything needed before students arrive. Families also have sought assurances that student services will continue uninterrupted. Brunner said special education, speech therapy, counseling, and related services will all continue at the temporary campus. After-school offerings, including kids' club and youth enrichment programs, also will be available at Manitas. We are continuing to work together to ensure that everything is ready to go prior to the start of the school year, Brunner said. The district also has launched a dedicated webpage to provide updates, progress reports, photographs, environmental testing results, and frequently asked questions as repairs continue. Officials have notified neighboring residents that traffic around the previously closed campus will increase once school resumes. Community rallies. Mirada principal Michelle Anderson was vacationing in New York when she learned of the flood. "I was about to paddleboard on the Hudson River," she recalled. She immediately joined district officials by Zoom before returning to Arizona to begin planning the relocation. Anderson praised facilities crews for their rapid response and said she never sensed frustration despite the enormous task ahead. "I just have to say it has been so smooth and responsive that I just don't think I could ever show my appreciation for you and your team," she told district facilities staff. She also credited Mirada families and teachers for embracing the unexpected challenge. "My community, the families have been so kind and supportive. Let us know when you're ready to move and we will be there. My PTO is just so amazing and fantastic." Teachers, she said, have displayed similar flexibility. They're like, "You let us know, first of all, when we get into Mirada and get our staff and go to Manitas. But I'm just so thankful for the team that we have." District officials said the financial impact to Kyrene itself is expected to be limited because the damage is being handled as a no-fault insurance claim. The district's deductible is $5,000, with insurance covering the remaining eligible restoration costs. Meanwhile, facility staff are cataloging every damaged item, separating furniture and equipment that can be salvaged from items considered total losses. Mead said the district may also reduce replacement costs by repurposing furniture no longer needed at other campuses. "We may be able to consolidate furniture from other sites to decrease the cost of the claim," he said. For now, district officials are planning as though Mirada students and staff will remain at Manitas until after winter break. Once it dries off and is repaired, Mirada will house about 680 students, district spokeswoman Erin Helm said. That timeline, however, could change if repairs progress faster than anticipated. "We advise the Mirada community that students and staff may not return to Mirada until after winter break," Herman said. "However, if repairs and remediation are completed sooner, if that's possible, and the environment is deemed safe, then the Mirada community could return to campus sooner." And next, sticking with the Chandler, Arizonan, we have an article by Ken Sane, Arizonan Managing Editor. Chandler Boys and Girls Club members get their space. Word was out long before the renovations of the Chandler Compadres Boys and Girls Club were complete. "Our numbers have doubled, I think we'll triple, after the summer," said Marcia Mintz, president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of the Valley. "This is their space. This is their place to come and find out who they are, learn skills, develop friendships, have mentors, help find career pathways, engage in physical activity, get off those devices," she said, pointing to a phone. Mintz and others showed off the results of a combined $2.5 million renovation of the Chandler Compadres branch of the Boys and Girls Club of the Valley on June 23rd with a ribbon cutting. One of the first changes visitors will notice is a secure entryway. "No one can just walk in our building and have access to our kids, so safety is always first," Mintz said. "It's also a lobby for parents to wait and get information and be a resource for families. But you need that safety barrier for the kids." Another new addition is a community conference room, which is available to other nonprofits that need a place to meet. But those are not necessarily what's leading to an increase in enrollment over the past year while construction was underway. Mintz said they converted a former outdoor area that was not being utilized and turned it into a teen center. "Could we build a space that really met the needs of teens?" Mintz said. "We got input from our teens. What did they want to see in a teen space?" The city of Chandler, which owns the building, and the nonprofit Chandler Compadres paid for the renovation. The Compadres raised money and then donated it to many Chandler-based charities. However, the Boys and Girls Club of the Valley gets the biggest slice. The city bought the old Seton Catholic High School buildings in 1995 and leased them to the Boys and Girls Club of the Valley. In 2009, the old Seton buildings were demolished and the current building constructed with an $8.5 million approved in the 2007 bond election. The city council approved spending no more than $1.58 million for the renovations. The Compadres contributed $1.4 million to the Boys and Girls Club, part of the $3 million they donated to nonprofits this year. Over the last few years, they've invested over $6 million to make this the premier Boys and Girls Club, not in Arizona, but in the country, Mintz said. "We have clubs from around the country come in to tour this club because they want to see what the Compadres have done." They also made Americans with Disabilities Act upgrades, ensuring all students would be able to use the facility, Mintz said. One of the more recent programs added to the Boys and Girls Club is AZ Youth Force, which is a workforce development program. Teens as young as 14 can get internships to get real-world experience and see if one profession interests them enough to keep pursuing it. It's really hard for young people to know what job or career they want, and actually to gain access to the market, Mintz said. They do 30 hours of essential skill training with our staff, and then they are assigned a case manager. They're 8 to 12-week paid internships. That's one of the many programs the club offers to tweens and teens, Mintz said. She said the recent renovations will help them keep doing that. "Besides the building and construction, we're building something else," Mintz said. "We're building confidence. We're making sure we're building friendships and resilience and leadership skills. We build dreams and we build futures." You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am your reader, J.W. Nicholas, and we're looking at news of the past week from Chandler, Gilbert, and Sun Lakes. As a quick reminder, if you missed any part of this program or others you may enjoy on Sun Sounds, you can access all of them anytime, on demand, on our website at www.sunsounds.org. Find them under Broadcast Info and Audio. And now we'll move along to our next story from the Sun Lake Splash, this by Gary Chalk. "Living retired, have you ripened well?" I met someone the other day who I have not seen for many years. We exchanged the usual pleasantries. I sucked in my stomach, and then she said something that caught me off guard. "Gary, the last time I saw you was Y2K. You look great. You've ripened well." Ripened well? I've been described many ways, but never has someone said I have ripened well. So the following morning at breakfast, I put the question to my wife, Jan. "Dear, do you think I've ripened well?" Jan glanced up at me, then she looked back down at her bowl of granola, With a wrinkled dry prune on her spoon, she deadpanned, "Compared to what?" "Jan, thanks for your honesty. Gary, did you want me to say you have more wrinkles than an elephant?" "What constitutes ripening well? Everybody living retired, men and women, expect our bodies to change as we age. It begins at our neck, it gets flabby, the skin sags, and we develop, oh my God, turkey neck. From there, everything heads south like a Canadian snowbird. All the extra skin bulges together as it travels down through the breasts and picks up steam towards the stomach and hips. The march cannot be stopped. Like molten lava, our thighs become fatter. Eventually, everything reconstitutes as fat ankles. They look like the ruins of the Greek columns at the Acropolis. Another sign we have not ripened well is the decline of our cognitive skills, our sense of logic and reaction. Here's an example, purely hypothetical, of course. This did not happen to me. You're driving and suddenly swerve to miss a pine tree and your wife screams, "Gary, it was the air freshener hanging from your rearview mirror." That's a sign you're not ripening well. There are many more signs men have not ripened well. How about this one? Does your wife confront you at the breakfast table? When you get up to pee in the middle of the night, are you trying to hit the wall? Or what about this one? It's one thing for living retired men to meet up with each other at a coffee shop. I do. We natter on and on about our cholesterol levels, our blood pressure. But what's with our obsession with checking the weather app on our phone every couple of minutes? It's like we're planning our day around a 20% chance of rain. Before living retired, we had no time for small talk. Now we skip the drive-thru automated teller machine just so we can go inside and chat up the bank teller. We talk about the weather, the grandkids, and other important things while the line of customers behind us grows. Body maintenance becomes a thing. Your joints pop, your back aches, your knees throb. And that's before you get out of bed. Have you ripened well when you get out of the car after a 3-minute drive to the gas station and stand at the car door slowly stretching before you can walk? Here's my advice to ripen well. Tell anyone who will listen that you don't have wrinkles. They are laugh lines. Living Retired is written by humor columnist Gary Chuck. And now we move along into Gilbert, an article from the Gilbert Sun News, this by Gary Grotto, GSN contributor. Only one LD14 House candidate shows for debate. A 27-year-old Republican candidate for the state House said Thursday that illegal immigration has contributed to the state's housing shortage and conservatism is about saving Western civilization. Jedediah Lyons' remarks came in an interview as part of the Arizona Citizens Clean Elections Commission's debate program. Lyons' Legislative District 14 primary election opponents, Representative Lauren Hendricks and Tyler Farnsworth, declined invitations to the debate. Lyons, a former aide to Republican U.S. Representative Abe Hamadeh, seems to be the odd man out in the state House race. Hendricks, Farnsworth, and Senate candidates Miley Biggs are running mates, according to signs around the district. Miley Biggs is the daughter of Congressman Andy Biggs, who is seeking the Republican gubernatorial nomination. Lyons' former employer, Turning Point Action, also endorsed his opponents and Biggs. Democrat Mary Rose will vie for one of the two seats against the Republican nominees in the general election. Independents can vote in the election, but must request a Republican or a Democratic ballot by July 10th at elections.maricopa.gov. The district covers Gilbert, parts of Chandler, and unincorporated areas where the per capita income is about 25% higher than the rest of Arizona, and the median income is 50% greater than the rest of the state, according to the U.S. Census data. Republicans make up 43% of the registered voters in that district, compared to less than 22% registered Democrats. Farnsworth, who owns marketing and real estate investment businesses, said in an interview with the Gilbert Chamber of Commerce that he entered the race because he wants to keep regulations low, government small, and to be a voice for other small business owners like him. "I feel like we have enough attorneys and true politicians down there," Farnsworth said. I wanted to be able to put my hat in the ring and be an individual that could be a statesman down there. Farnsworth, who is the fourth vice chair of the Arizona Republican Party, said he started his first agency in 2015 and worked with local brands and Fortune 100 companies. He sold his share of that business and started another ad agency. Hendricks is on his second stint at the legislature. First elected in 2008, he served one term and lost the Republican primary of Legislative District 22, which covered much of the same area as LD 14. Hendricks has owned and managed a wide range of businesses, including auto repair, home construction, land development, retail, business consulting, home rentals, and banking. He returned to the legislature in 2023, but during his time away, he served on Gilbert's Town Council and the Maricopa County Community College District Board. Hendricks successfully sued the town to take his seat early when he beat an appointed council member in the primary election rather than waiting until January of the next year. Lyons spent almost 30 minutes making his case to Republican and independent voters in the heavily Republican LD-14, which covers Gilbert, parts of Chandler, and unincorporated areas. Lyons also said he would support a state-level program in the mold of the U.S. Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, to review government spending and waste, to combat inflation, and running a nonprofit has taught him financial stewardship and managing limited resources. Lyons has business acumen too. He started a business at 19, and in 2023, he and his sister founded the Dandy Project, an idea inspired by her volunteering at a pregnancy resource center in Flagstaff, or a crisis pregnancy center, which offers free pregnancy tests, ultrasounds, and adoption education. Crisis pregnancy centers are the pro-life counter to Planned Parenthood. Lyons' campaign website says he is unapologetically pro-life. The Dandy Project, according to a news article in AZ Free News, buys supplies such as car seats, diapers, wipes, and strollers at heavily reduced cost from retail overstock sales. The following are excerpts from the interview with Lyons on the night of the canceled debate. It has been edited for brevity. Republicans and voters in your district are concerned about the housing crisis, and there isn't agreement on what's driving it. What's your diagnosis for who or what is primarily to blame, and what's the first bill that you push to address it? Well, I believe that a large driver is COVID-era inflation, but I believe that the root cause is we have an incredibly high volume of illegal immigrants that have worked their way into our communities, and I believe that's impacting the inventory available and driving up housing costs. I would like to see more initiatives in place that help address this issue. As for a bill that directly relates to housing costs, I don't have any prepared at this time. I need to get in there and begin evaluating on a more intimate level before I can give you an answer about how exactly I would like to address that specifically. But I do believe that meaningful wages are part of the answer, because we all talk about the housing problem, but houses do cost what they cost. And so we need to be working on delivering more meaningful wages to Arizonans, and I believe that will help offset the issue as well. Describe a time in the last 2 years when you changed your mind on something political and tell us what changed it. Sure. So it's hard to answer that in a 2-year period because my beliefs have been pretty solid for the last 2 years. I would say that one shift in thought that I've had recently is what it meant to be a conservative. My value system is that of a conservative, and over the last 6 or 7 years, as I've gotten involved and more engaged politically and observed things up close, I often saw that those were prioritizing fiscal responsibility and admired them for doing that. However, I observed a few decisions that, in the long run, didn't work out so well and ended up costing people more money than otherwise. And I realized in my research that really what it means to be a fundamental principle of being a conservative is protecting Western civilization. And if we get too laser focused on fiscal responsibility, the way some other conservatives have, you end up making decisions that are penny wise and kind of foolish. What would your approach be to help families and people in your district across the state who are having a hard time getting by, paying rent, and affording groceries. And please be specific. What would your first act in the legislature be when it comes to inflation and affordability? Well, I think most immediately there needs to be more comprehensive efforts toward lowering costs for taxpayers. So Andy Biggs is running for governor and has pledged to establish a Doege-like initiative. And that is something that is a priority for me as well. I would like to begin evaluating the government programs that exist and doing so intimately so that we can begin understanding how we can better leverage the taxpayer resources we are stewards of and find areas that we can lower costs to taxpayers. But beyond that, I believe this applies especially to those at my station of life, that better efforts need to be made for workforce development and increasing wages. I don't mean increasing the minimum wage, I mean invigorating the economy to create better paying jobs for people. I believe that should be prioritized and that should be a countermeasure to inflation. You're only 27, you've already built a business in a nonprofit. So what did those experiences teach you? Well, I believe that it was the homeschooling that allowed me to have success early in my career. My parents had a very hands-on approach to finding us educational resources that were conducive to what we were passionate about. And early on, I always had an entrepreneurial spirit. So what I've learned in operating both a business and a nonprofit is being a good steward of money. Money is finite and is an essential resource to running any sort of organization. So you have to be a good steward. You have to have discernment and foresight. And I believe in a nonprofit, donors' money specifically, you have to have integrity, foresight, and discernment on how to appropriately manage that money. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Chandler, Gilbert, and Sun Lakes. A quick reminder, you can always find us on any of your connected devices streaming via our Sun Sounds of Arizona mobile app, available for Apple and Android phones and tablets. Once again, I'm your volunteer reader, J.W. Nicholas. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.